This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
You're listening to Femi on FUBAR Radio.
Come on, Dad. I'm trying to make a good impression.
The conclusions of the December European Council went further than before in seeking to address the concerns of this House, and they have legal status. I've been in contact with European leaders since then about MPs' concerns. These discussions have shown that further clarification on the backstop is possible, and those talks will continue over the next few days.
I'd be very surprised if the motion on Tuesday went through. It looks as if it will be defeated. The Prime Minister is as aware of that as anybody else is.
I actually genuinely think you can't do it on the 29th of March this year. It's simply not viable for so many practical reasons. So we're going to have to look, seems to me, at what are the available options that realistically are still on the table.
If the deal is not voted on as vote that's coming up, then actually we're going to be in uncharted territory.
Two things. Firstly, could we get over feeling sorry for Theresa May?
Is we have to be absolutely... I do object to being called a Nazi, actually.
Right. Well, apologies if you're offended by what you're listening to.
I just think this is astonishing. This is what has happened to our country, actually. This is what's happened to our country.
If the government cannot pass its most important legislation, then there must be a general election at the earliest opportunity. So I say this to Theresa May. If you're so confident in your deal, call the election and let the people decide.
I'm happy to repeat what I have said previously, that we will be leaving the European Union on the 29th of March. I want us to leave the European Union on the 29th of March with a good deal that's on the table.
Welcome back to The Floor Is Yours with Femi. I'm from Our Future Choice, our so-called OFOC. We're the youth movement to get a vote on the Brexit deal. And today we'll be joined by Alistair Coleman, who is a journalist who specialises in disinformation and fake news, and also North Korea, which is always a sensitive topic. We've also got Zach Polanski, Green candidate for London Mayor. But I'm joined right now with Desiree Birch, originally from New York. She's a comedian and has a show on London... in London on the 10th of January. Welcome, Desiree.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. So we've had a fun year. 2018, some stuff happened.
Yeah, a couple things.
You're from the States. We both had countries that have had some issues over the past couple of years, especially since 2016.
Are there any countries that haven't had some issues over the past couple of years?
That's true. Yeah. But I feel like things have gotten particularly bad. Or interesting. Fun. Let's be neutral. Let's say they've been interesting and fun.
Different. Curious, unique. Yeah, they've been all of those things for sure.
For example, I know that gun control is still an issue in America.
Oh, it's pretty much defines what America is. I don't know that when it's going to not be an issue. We're not willing to put those arms down.
Because I mean, there was the Parkland shooting.
Yes,
and
yes.
I'm not sure if it was at this point, but at some point last year, Donald Trump said our schools are currently gun-free zones, and that makes them very dangerous places. Which is
like
just
much
amazing.
Of the rest of the developed world that is meant to be a gun-free zone,
yeah.
And is super. I mean, you know, the world is going to be a dangerous place, but let's not give a 19-year-old the ability to push a button on a semi-automatic weapon and, you know, completely lay out part of his old school. Let's not do that. You know, let's.
Are you saying that guns in schools aren't good?
They don't really add to the curriculum in any fundamental way.
Every child's essential was pencil case, ruler, and
AR-15. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to get one of those wheelie backpacks for that. You know, that's going to break those little five-year-olds' backs.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. You've got to think of children's safety. But this is going to be a roundup of the year and a look forward to what's going to be happening in the next coming year. So if you want to get involved, call, text, and call. Text us on at email at fubarradio.com, Femi at Fubar Radio and tweet us at Fubar Radio, and you can call on 0330-223-0200. So, gun control is definitely something that needs to be dealt with.
I can't help but feel it's completely part and parcel of what America is from the beginning. I mean, you know, we started in conflict, racism, and we continue to, you know, perpetrate that. That's pretty much what defines us. And so I don't know that most Americans know how to undo that without undoing the fabric of what we think we are.
Yeah, I mean, the Second Amendment just doesn't seem to be going anywhere, even, and the most extreme interpretations of the Second Amendment don't seem to be going anywhere, which is unfortunate. We also had Ford with the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, where he ended up being portrayed as the victim, even though, well, we just saw
he
a woman.
Portrayed himself as the victim, and a bunch of other white men stood up to stand next to him, because that's what white men do when they're out of options, to take us down.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump did say that this is a very, very difficult time for young men in America, especially given that they might be accused of
being super rapey when they've done that.
Yeah,
wow.
Like, I really feel bad for what was the kid? What's his name? Brock Turner.
Oh, Brock Turner. Oh, yeah. That piece of garbage.
Yeah, I mean, he had such a promising career ahead of him. I mean,
as a full-blown rapist.
Why should his academic career be ruined just because he raped a girl behind a dumpster?
Man, I mean, he does have a very strong opportunity to educate himself about other things besides getting into the school that he feels he deserves to go to after committing a huge offense. Everyone is talking about how 2018 was the year of the woman and how much the tide is turning. And I want to see that continue to take place so that we can maybe start to question some of our laws and policies and just general opinions that really are astoundingly unfair when you look at them, you know, gender and colorblind.
Yeah, I think. Because we have someone like Donald Trump in the White House, it does kind of just cut color the entire narrative, which is kind of the problem.
It also sort of distracts us we continually make these people who are our exceptional standout perpetrators exceptions to the wider rule as opposed to ever addressing the wider rule. I mean, to be fair, obviously, we got to address Donald Trump as soon as humanly possible. But really, there's a larger culture of that really has to be undone. And it's going to take, you know, many, 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 many years as it did to entrench that culture.
Okay, let's sort to the phones. Let's hear from a caller. His name is Nish. Hi, Nish.
Hi, Femi. How are you?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. What's going on?
Well, I just... Okay.
You know stuff.
I feel like I recognize this voice.
Yeah, I feel like you're probably supposed to be sitting in this booth instead of me right now, Nish.
Yeah, it's one of the more recognizably nasal voices in there.
That's on TV all the time. So yeah, pretty recognizable.
I was going to pretend that I'd never met Desiree before as well. And be like, hello, Smith. Nice to speak to you.
I just like the idea of all those times at the MASH test, me turning in your direction, just closing my eyes and saying everything. I've never met this man before in my life. What are you talking about?
I've never met this. Is it Desiree? Is that how you pronounce it?
Where do the accents go? It's difficult with these foreign names.
Well, it's
great. How's it going, guys?
It's great to have you on, Nish. So what would you say would be your highlight from 2018?
Or low light?
Oh, you know, it was non-stop fun for me. It was relentless fun. No, listen, I really do think, you know, the kind of work that you have been engaged in the last sort of year and a half has been really inspiring. Yeah. And the groundswell of activism that, I mean, has been inspired by, and I, you know, literally just coming in off the back of you guys talking about the Year of the Woman and how important it is that we continue and have wider conversations more than just a kind of select group of celebrity predators. That is, like, as always, Desiree Birch, who I've consistently maintained as the wisest person in the world, is a nail absolutely on the head. But I do think the kind of the awakening and the rising levels of activism in young people is the sole reason that we have to be optimistic about things. going into 2019.
Well, I mean, it's happening on both sides of the Atlantic. You're seeing it after the Parker shooting in terms of, stop allowing our kids to be killed. And also on this side with groups like Our Future, Our Choice, For Our Future's Sake, the young people that are rising up against the mess that is Brexit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to see younger people be animated and engaged, and also excited to see younger people be represented in politics. You know, I think the election of people like Ocasio-Cortez in the States is a real cause for optimism. And also, when I was growing up, we the kind of baseline narrative was that young people just weren't interested or engaged in politics. And I think we're seeing a reaction against that, certainly.
Excellent. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely it. I think I'd be curious to know also what would be your low light, because that's enough optimism. Who needs optimism?
We all desperately need optimism in this moment. But yeah, sure. I mean, well, especially for you, Nish, because you are the man who picks the bones. And so what is the biggest bone that you picked last year?
I watched you on Question Time last night offering to do Brexit. Brexit.
The offer still stands.
They're going to blame immigrants anyway. You may as well go in there instead of May. And they'll be like, well, fine, we'll take this darkie's word for it.
Let me absolutely go in there and springtime for Hitler Brexit.
I bet you could pull off a musical number. Just want to see your can-can.
There was just a string of lowlights. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to pick one specific one. I mean, I think there's a kind of cavalcade of Trump lowlights. I mean, I think also, like, I think closing the year on a government shutdown over his stupid fucking pointless wall. Like, there was something about that. There's always something of the anti-Father Christmas about Donald Trump.
You know, it's like we had the Mueller thing and everyone was so excited, and then he took that away from us too.
Yeah, Desiree came in and you did a great piece for us on the MASH report about the kind of rising level of excitement that's been happening over the sort of Mueller thing. And then the fact that he closed the year off shutting down the government over his stupid wall for idiots.
The ridiculous thing is that he's closing down the government because the government is refusing to pay for a wall that he said repeatedly that Mexico would pay for. Which is insane.
And
it sort of it wraps everything up that's terrible about him. You know, it's lies. It's completely, absolutely appalling mathematics. It's a profound misunderstanding of geopolitics. Yep. And it's a profound racism that drives the whole thing. Like, his commitment to racism, to be absolutely fair to him, is almost admirable.
And I would also speculate, obviously I know nothing, but, you know, some kind of mental health, like some kind of mood or personality disorder. Like, I think part of the problem is he literally just wakes up with doll's eyes, like, you know, I think this now and this is true and this is the way it is, and he completely, like, you know, whether he's too old, whether he's just some kind of rampant narcissist, probably a combination of all these things, the fact that he can do so with such conviction and such sort of almost insanity in the face of fact is so astounding. Yeah, and we're just sitting there like, this is astounding. We don't know what to do with that.
But I mean, he's been driving this narrative of it's us versus them, and just creating, I mean, I've heard him referred to as the divider in chief.
Yeah.
And it kind of links to what we saw this week with the harassment we saw outside Parliament. I mean, you've got journalists, you've got Owen Jones, a gay man, you've got Anna Soubry, a woman, Kay Burley, a woman, myself, a black man, all harassed outside Parliament, as if perhaps certain characteristics made these people particularly hostile, and it's just disgusting.
Yeah,
it's unleashed a sort of pungent toxin into our discourse, and the problem is that the people responsible. So, you know, the watching the video footage of you guys the last couple of weeks was disgusting, but it is the absolute consequence of the portrayal of Brexit's collapse as being the result of it being betrayed by opposing forces, when for the entire period of the last 2 years, both the party of government and the biggest party in opposition have said that Brexit must happen. Brexit is failing entirely on its own terms because of the incompetence of its architects. Mm-hmm. But by shifting the blame very quickly to be frank, us. they've, you know, they're escaping any kind of blame for it, and it is you know, causing this kind of direct, this sort of action and anger that, you know, if they don't, I think the only way things will be clear is when we get a proper, unambiguous apology for the lines of the League campaign.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of like a social form of arson or something. You know, it's just going to, you know, you're just inflaming and causing problems that, yeah, sure, we're under the surface, but there's a lot of credit to be given for keeping things under a friggin' surface. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can
hate people, just like tone it down a bit. We all got to live. Yeah.
But one thing I would say is if there's going to be one benefit from this, is because it's the Brexit result made people that are like the sort of racists we saw the other day step out from the shadows. The same thing happened with Trump. We can now identify people who have those rules and separate them from the reasonable people who voted for Brexit.
But then what do we do with them? Like, I kind of loved them in the shadows, you know, sitting there on the internet just being like, rah, 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 and not marching with tiki torches or actively putting swastikas on buildings or actively attacking people. I kind of like them feeling separated and disempowered.
And on that, I do agree with you, but when we have this discussion around Brexit, because those racists are mixed in with the normal people, it's hard to have that discussion, because then if you then tar all the people that voted for Brexit with that brush, you can't have a productive discussion. But because we can now say, all right, you've got these little nut jobs over here, and you've got reasonable Brexit voters who wanted a better NHS on this side, we can have a conversation with them and say, all right, you wanted a better NHS, the medical community is now saying that Brexit is bad for the NHS, what do you want to do now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think you're doing a great job of reaching out to the sensible Leave voters. I think that is a really important thing, especially if we do end up in a kind of second referendum situation.
Yeah, which I'm currently seeing is pretty much the only way we move forward. But yeah, Nish, absolutely an amazing surprise to hear from you.
Yes, absolute pleasure, Femi. Lovely to talk to you, and keep doing what you're doing, and I respect the hell out of you.
I appreciate that, Nish, and I hope to speak to you soon. Cheers.
I'll text you later.
Text you later. TTYL. I mean, I'm curious to find out what, I mean, you are a force to be reckoned with intellectually and politically. And I'm curious, obviously, there are the immediate problems of trying to find, you know, these groups, like you're saying, that really voted because of the NHS and are not racist and whatnot. What do we do with the people who are virulently racist? I mean, I know that that's not an easily solvable problem because we've been not solving it forever. But presumably, if there was a second referendum and everybody's like, nope, no Brexit, and we apologized our way back into the EU and everything else, what happens to those people who are filled with that much hate? Where does that go? Because if it sits there and festers, it really does grow and breed other things. Like, what do we do about that?
I think what you've got to do is, because they'll be made weaker by the fact that they lose. And also,
because, you know, Donald Trump and people like that they lose. The Confederate supporters lost centuries ago, and they're still fighting.
I hear you.
The losers don't go away. They just sit there and, you know.
But the thing is, they gain their power from existing inequalities. So if you've got a part of the country that is ignored by the political system, for us, the North, in America, it would be the Midwest or something like that, the Kansas, the flyover states, those people are vulnerable to people, to the far right people going there and saying, all right, the reason why life is shit for you is because migrants, the EU, the blah, 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 the political system, blah, 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 blah. And if there was less inequality, regional inequality, there'd be less for those far right nutters to tap into and say, and point the finger. And I think that's the conversation we have. But yeah, I mean, we have to just call it out. I mean, I've been getting some pretty racist remarks. I mean,
I'll bet. I mean, if you're a public figure with anything darker than like a taupe skin color, then and it's the first thing they go to. Yeah. You know, you're lucky you don't happen to be fat, because that would be the first thing, and then you're black. Yeah. But still.
And a woman.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just like, rah, 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 all of the stuff. And it's like, what was your point, and why are you this upset?
It's just so toxic. I mean, I get racist abuse pretty much every day or so.
Of course you do. Of course.
Threats of violence every 2 months. And in February last year, somebody posted my home address online. That's what we're talking
about. Oh, someone doxed you. What happened? What was the fallout of that?
The fallout of that was I made a Twitter complaint. I tried to call the Met Police and nothing happened. That's the current situation we're in. And we've got like a far right nutter with 70,000 followers now is launching a Twitter campaign that is trying to say that because my parents came from Nigeria, they're somehow implicated in a genocide. Well, genocide, according to his words. And
isn't everything and everyone in Britain implicated in several genocides all throughout history and the universe?
Apparently.
Isn't that the mark of a winner? Is a successful genocide?
You're expecting a comprehension of irony from the far right. I think that's your main mistake. But he was posting pictures of my parent. Well, no, he was posting a picture of basically black people with guns coming off of a boat onto land, and then talking about my parents directly.
Oh,
which
God.
I mean,
God damn, that was racist. That was racist.
I mean, seriously.
Man, so right. I just, you know, obviously the reason, you know, I mean, there's plenty of reason for that, but it's just like, well, it's the easiest thing to do to win, but it's kind of, well, what are you winning? I don't know. I know it's a dumb question, but when you walk away from being completely eviscerating someone like that, just being like, I'm going to dehumanize you in a second because socially and historically I have the power to do that. What do you walk away with? What do you feel when you've revealed someone's home address? And, but, you know, are you deluded enough to think that that somehow reinforces your safety or security? Or do you just feel better than, like, what do you go home and do?
I think they want to intimidate. I mean, they want to make me feel that if I continue along this road, something's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, something did happen in 2016. We had the murder of Joe Cox, and now I'm a prominent figure in the same cause that Joe Cox was in, and I'm black, and we're right on the cusp of a really big decision regarding Brexit. And he thinks that if he can basically do this sort of thing, that I'll back down.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, there's too much of a groundswell behind you to ever do that. I mean, dude, don't be a martyr. It's not a good look, but like...
not a good look.
You're too young.
Martyrdom isn't in the season.
I'm just saying, you'd make for an attractive statue, but I'd rather look at you grow and progress and actually be, you know, a very vital part of the political landscape in the future. So,
I'd prefer that too. I'd choose that over death, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, do you have any homies with brass knuckles? Like, what are you doing? You need more homies.
Yeah, I'm feeling a Pulp Fiction record. I'm gonna call a couple pipe hitting niggas with a
kind of. Yeah. What, I mean, Samuel L., you could stop for a minute and just be somewhat intimidating. I mean, I think enough people would be like, is that Samuel L. Jackson that you could get away? And that's a defense enough, right? He can take a break. He's got all that Capital One money. He's fine. He's fine.
What do you think about, I mean, I've heard you before talking about the Mueller investigation. Is Trump going to get taken down, or are we just going to keep getting drip-fed the foreplay of these new information regarding the investigation?
I mean, I definitely feel like there is a purpose to the foreplay. It is up to us to be patient enough for the big payoff. obviously, you know, Mueller's very much like, you know, there's no leaks, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to put everything into this report. I have to be completely thorough and ironclad in order for this to have any success whatsoever. So it's going to come as it comes, and the media are hungry for it, so they're going to be trying to, they're the ones sucking the drops out to drip feed us with, obviously. But it is, I wonder if this sort of $5 billion for the wall shutdown seems like the Hail Mary pass, and to a certain degree of like, well, there's nothing stopping me from doing this, which is what I found out before I decided that I was going to do it. And it is, he operates on distraction, obfuscation, that kind of thing. So, you know, as long as the government doesn't come back, then they can't do anything to, you know, take him down. And he is that narcissistically sort of Machiavellian. He is that just sort of like, obviously, I think there's so many of his businesses have failed because he hasn't made any kind of good business or factual or logical sense at times. He's just kind of like my way or the highway. And this is more about his personality disorder than it is about anything coming out success, because he's got, you know, he's got a cushion.
But I mean, because shutting down the wall, shutting down the government because they won't pay for a wall, he said Mexico pay for. I mean, the visual I'm thinking of is a baby throwing the toys out of the pram and complaining that he doesn't have those toys.
Yes. I mean, absolutely. But at the same time, at some point, that baby maybe doesn't know, but instinctively knows that it can wear you down to the point at which you just keep picking up the toys and you give it what it wants because you are a tired mom and you have so much going on that really, you know, baby gets what it wants.
Well, I mean, you saw him with, let's listen to this clip.
Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
In Jim's defense, I've traveled with him and watched him. He's a diligent reporter who busts.
Well, I'm not
like
a big fan of yours either. So
I understand.
I mean, how old do you have to be? I mean, seriously, the kid is a child.
Yeah. I mean, they do say that we return to childhood in our older age, and I am not going to let that take the blame. He's been like this his entire life. Let's be real.
But I mean, okay, one last thing. The blue wave. Was that really a thing, or was the win in the house not really the victory that we hoped it would be?
Well, it's not the victory we hoped it would be in that there's only so much the House is going to be able to do. You know, and so you just kind of have to go back to understanding our political system in order to be like, okay, this isn't going to necessarily change everything. Mm. And the articles of impeachment being brought into play, you'd have to get back into government to even impeach someone. So, yeah, you know, there's always a diversionary tactic. But I think that it was, in fact, for those who are represented by the color blue in my country, very, very much representative of, you know, as the House is meant to be, of who we are and what our values are and what we're pushing forward. I mean, you know, Nevada's got a majority female, right?
Yep.
You know, representation. There are lots more LGBTQI plus people in government now, including a governor in Colorado. There are two Muslim women in Michigan and Minnesota.
And there's the dancing senator as well?
Yes, exactly. Who everyone tried to send up for dancing. And she's like way better at dancing and more relatable because of that video than anything you could have thrown against her, right? It's just like, wow, you're making socialism look real cool right now, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
We've got an email here. My favorite moment, and this is from Nazarene in London. My favorite moment has to be the balloon of Sadiq Khan in the yellow bikini, not because I hate him, but because of the 9,000 attending Facebook event, but only 300 turned up.
So wait a second. I missed this balloon entirely.
I think it was a response to what happened with the Trump balloon.
Yeah.
Which, let's say, a fair few more people turned up to last year.
Yes. Yeah, I was there. There were quite a few people.
I had a sign that said, our crowd is bigger than your crowd. And on the other side, it said, and Melania knows it.
Yes, right. And she feels that and thinks about it at night. Ooh. She's just trying to get to 2020 and be like, when can I leave this book?
Okay. My next thing is regarding what would be your favorite moment of the year? Top moment, personal.
Oh my goodness. Top moment.
And what would you want to happen in this year?
Man, I should have thought about that. Mm. I feel like everything is just funny because it's terrible. Trying to think of highlights. Ireland repealed the Eighth.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. That's pretty huge.
Which is just, it's so relieving, especially given that I run a youth campaign to make my country more progressive.
Yeah.
To see that happening in Ireland run by young people is just so...
Yeah, it was a hard-fought battle. Yeah. And that is hugely important for just women's health, and as we know, because of women, just sort of society and politics in general.
Exactly.
So that I think was a huge maybe sometimes. It just came in the middle of a lot of other terrible things. But you're like, wait a second, that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, legalizing abortion in a highly Catholic country driven by young people. It's just what we want to see.
Yeah, and I would also probably say rescuing those Thai kids from that cave was pretty, because so many countries and so many people and so many agencies came together to get these boys out of a cave, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. Like they're 4 miles into a cave.
Yeah, that was, it looked terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely terrifying. The fact that they were just doing yoga breathing for like 2 weeks or whatever, waiting to get out, like, it's just incredible what we can do when we actually do come together.
Even if Elon Musk then went into Twitch, had a Twitch meltdown afterwards.
Like, oh, that guy's a pedo because I didn't get there first or whatever. Like, I mean, it's funny because all of this is, all of this political turmoil is bringing a lot of mental health and otherwise issues to the surface of just toxic. Like, that's just, well, you know, I know I'm a nerd and I'm a do-gooding nerd, but I also want to control everything. And it's just bringing that to the surface, which is so fun to watch.
I think my favorite moment from 2018 has to be the moment when the Brexit politicians saw the deal that was negotiated as a result of the Brexit that they made happen, and they went into absolute fucking meltdown.
Yeah.
You had Nigel Farage saying this is the worst deal in history. You had Jacob Rees-Mogg saying this deal makes us a slave state after he said Brexit would mean we take back control. You had Boris Johnson saying that this is worse than staying in the EU. The people that argued for Brexit absolutely trashing Brexit.
I'm sorry to be the one asking ignorant questions, but I'm not from here. These are highly educated men. They, presumably from their histories, right? Yeah. You know, they of all people understood what lies they were putting forward.
Yep.
And that they were, in fact, lies.
Yep.
Correct? Right? Is it safe to assume? Or are they actually secretly dumb and not understanding the motion they put forward?
Okay, so you've got Nigel Farage who told outright lies about immigration.
Yeah.
Because, and I know that because he said these things before the referendum. I called him up to correct him. He agreed with me, but he still repeated those lies afterwards.
Okay.
You've got Boris Johnson, who said specifically that we should stay within the EU single market, basically the rule system, which means that it makes it cheaper to sell between countries.
Uh-huh.
And then during the referendum, he said we should leave it, and then resigned because the Brexit move ended up too close to the single market, which just shows that he has zero moral integrity.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jacob Rees-Mogg. I think he's just an extremist, to be honest. I think he genuinely believes it doesn't matter the cost to the ordinary working people or person. It's just about getting his view of what he calls sovereignty.
Were any of the people behind Brexit genuine believers that it would work? Or were they all using it for their own
political
ends?
Believing that it would make lives better for British people?
Yeah.
I think some of them thought just the general British spirit, we will do better, we will survive, we will prosper on our own.
Sense of entitlement gone too far, that sense of like exceptionalism, essentially, right?
There has to be
believe that.
If you believe that 27 countries need the UK more than we need them, given that we are an island on a continent where most of the countries are in a system which provides benefits to countries in that system.
Yeah.
You have to believe innately that we're better than other countries. And so, I mean, it's the only explanation, but that seemed to be the narrative that won. So I think we need to have a real discussion as to what we are as a country and whether or not we are still the British Empire or whether or not we are a good country, but not just better than everyone else.
Well, wait, we're not the British Empire anymore, right?
Yeah, we're not.
Okay, so in whose minds is that not settled?
I've spoken to some people on the radio.
Still,
I wouldn't say most people, but I think that there is that innate sense of us being better than other countries, which for most of us, we have as like a joke in the back of our head. Like we joke,
but the joke is based on some kind of sense of truth about that, right?
It's based on, we know that this happened in the past. We joke about it now, but we don't.
But we're bitter.
We don't.
We joke about it because I'm not bitter at all. Just give me a chance to shank you in the back.
Well, yeah, it's definitely an it's definitely a complicated issue of national identity.
I mean, and that's not a diss at all. It's just literally, I mean, lots of countries think that they're the best or they're better than other places and whatnot.
Well, I mean, you have...
I come from the country that's like, we are number one. And it's like, yes, in killing each other, for sure.
Lewis Black made a joke about that. He said that if you had, I mean, he was talking about America saying they're the best country in the world. He said that if you had somebody in your office who came in every day and said, I'm the greatest fucker here. Yeah. And all you sniveling shits would die without me.
Yeah.
I guarantee by the end of the week, you'd have killed him.
Yeah, exactly. Or unfortunately, become somehow psychologically enslaved. By you know, yeah. I mean, repeat one, that one enough. It's like, yeah, it's just like water torture. Suddenly you're like, yeah, you're right.
And from Richard the Hun, it was the first year in my life where I couldn't bear to listen to news or political comment. This is the first year where I honestly came to believe that the country is on the cliff edge. No highlight for me at all. I mean, yeah, it's depressing when you hear people that watch a year where there's been absolute political chaos, where nobody seems to have the country's best interest at heart in politics, and they lose hope.
Yes, I mean, it does have real life consequences outside of the political landscape. I think that there was some kind of stat someone was telling me about sort of suicide rates and whatnot going up in response to Brexit and just generally the past year that we've had. And I can understand anxiety levels going up drastically, because I feel like that happened for everyone that I know, as well as sort of just general levels of despair that I understand why this person had to check out. A lot of people have to check out. But it is that thing of like, take a break and come back. But come back and do what? Like, receive more bad news? But activism is important.
But I mean, it's the same thing that we have, that the worse things get, the more you have a backlash to make things get better. I mean, after Trump got elected, we saw Muslims praying on prayer mats in airports and people surrounding them applauding them, clapping. The fact that people were so scared about what Trump was doing to their country made people want to embrace progressive values even more and celebrate those values, which I think I mean, in Australia you had what's her name? Is Sarah what number is this? We had Sarah who went into Parliament and basically called out all of her colleagues for being basically really really sexist. And it was this.
Yeah. As the person in this chamber of which the reprehensible and disgusting comments were directed to by Senator O'Sullivan, I want to make it very clear that I am thankful for Senator Di Natale for standing up and calling them out. That is what real men do. Real men don't insult and threaten women. They don't slut-shame them, and they don't attack them and make them feel bullied in their workplace. I have sat in this chamber for weeks and weeks, months, and heard the disgusting slurs and attacks coming from a particular group in this place. And I, for one, am sick of it. And I know many of my female colleagues on all sides of politics are sick of it too. And I will name you, because you are not fit to be in this chamber, you're not fit to represent your constituents, and you're not fit to call yourselves men. Senator O'Sullivan, Senator Annie, Senator Bernardi, Senator Lionhelm, you day after day come into this place and hurl insults across this chamber, play the gender card, and the moment anyone stands up to you, you have the most fragile glass jaws of all. You are cowards.
Which is just awesome. I mean, it's obviously horrible that she had to go through that degree of sexism. We've seen it here with Diane Abbott's been through sexism. Pretty much every female politician gets it these days. But I mean, it's good to see that not only are these women standing up against the sexism that they experience, but that is being applauded, and that people aren't. I mean, you've got. It's just so necessary and a relief that when you've got people like Donald Trump leading the narrative and that somebody who can say the things that he said about women can actually be elected
and
to be the most...
And do the things he did to women.
Yeah, and do the things he did to women. And it can actually be elected to be the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah.
To have people fighting back, to have more women in Congress than ever before. I think, is that right?
Yeah.
That's about the blue wave. Yeah. I think I'm loving the fight back and just the activism that has been born from that.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite moment of the year has to be when we realized that the person that really speaks for everyone in the country, the person that can unite the country, is Danny Dyer. because he said in just a couple of minutes what absolutely everyone in the country was feeling. Desiree Birch, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And I just wanted to bring in a couple more guests. We'll Amazing. Be after the break. But let's have a listen to Danny Dyer because he is an absolute god.
So what's happened to that twat David Cameron who called it on? Let's be fair.
I think you're referring to our former Prime Minister.
Yeah, but how comes he can scuttle off? He called all this on.
Yeah. Yeah. He has no regrets.
Where is he? He's in Europe, in Nice, with his trotters up. Yeah. Where is the geezer? I think he should be held accountable.
It's a valid point. A lot of people do feel
twat.
That all politicians.
Amazing. That was just so much fun. right now in the studio, we're joined by Zach Polansky and Alistair Coleman. Zach Polansky is the Green Party candidate for mayor, and Alistair Coleman is a journalist who specializes in disinformation, fake news, and North Korea. North Korea, I really want to talk about that one purely because it's such a... Nobody really knows what Donald Trump has actually done. As in, has he done something good? Has he just rolled the dice with nuclear war and it happens to have not blown up in our faces yet? Is it going to go badly? Are we just waiting for the bombs to drop? What is your analysis of what Donald Trump did last year?
It's all very complex. All the running was made by Kim Jong-un. He came out in his New Year's speech last year and said he wanted to start this peace process after all these missile tests that they'd done in 2016 and 2017. So 2018 became the year of peace for North Korea. They went to the Olympic Games and they had all these summit meetings. First, a couple of meetings with the South Korean President Moon Jae-in and then the Singapore meeting with Trump. What Trump has offered is nothing that hasn't been offered before. And it's really the same with North Korea as well. They're not actually offering a great deal. They're not offering to denuclearize at all.
Yeah.
All they're offering at the moment is to stop the development of their nuclear missiles, which they say they have already finished developing them anyway.
Okay.
So the big thing is, has North Korea done this in good faith or not? I mean, it's sort of looking that way, but we can't tell because
we're not allowed to go in and check.
We're not allowed to go in and inspect. The big problem they did have was the lack of launch vehicles for their big nuclear missiles because ones they used were actually timber logging vehicles from China, which they then converted. So they've got to build their own to do that. And we don't know if they're doing that in the background. We don't know if they're expanding their submarine fleet to take the submarine launch missile they've been testing. So while Trump has actually been reasonably fine with the diplomacy that's been going on there, it's difficult to see if there's been any process, and you can see that patience is beginning to wear thin in Pyongyang. So we don't know where we are, and it's a very delicate moment, so we're going to have to see how things go in the next few months.
So basically, Donald Trump has gone over there, said that we're going to have an agreement whereby we'll more or less stop the progress of nuclear weapons, even though during Donald Trump's presidency, they tested nuclear weapons to the point that they can already just take us out. So he hasn't really achieved a great deal in terms of reducing North Korea's nuclear capability. He's just basically said, all right, we'll slow things down for now.
Yeah, there's been no reduction in the nuclear capability. We're not sure if they can actually deliver a nuclear missile onto a target yet. They've shown they can fire an ICBM and medium-range missiles and hit whatever target they're aiming for. But whether they can do that with a nuclear warhead on top or not is another matter altogether. And we just don't know. I mean, a lot of the things I'm always asked about North Korea, the answer is we just don't know until they tell us. We have to go.
So you're saying that nuclear safety of the world is depending on whether or not we can trust the word of Kim Jong-un?
Well, their entire country is based on survival, so they know about mutually assured destruction. So we're pretty certain they're not going to do anything rash. They're not going to invade South Korea. But they want the trade with South Korea because they're... economy's in the toilet. So yeah, they want to they want to get enough just to lift sanctions and by talking peace at the way they're going.
Okay, so what would you say would be your favourite moment of 2018, other than, you know, nuclear weapons?
Other than nuclear weapons, well, I wouldn't say it's my favourite. I've been following the Salisbury Skripal case most of the year. So I suppose my favourite moment was when the two gentlemen accused appeared on Russia Today, interviewed by the woman who runs Russia Today, saying that they'd gone to Salisbury twice on consecutive days to visit the cathedral and then came straight home again and then went down there again.
It's quite a cathedral.
It's so famous, right? And people from all over the world come to this country for that right. cathedral.
Yeah.
And they probably do now, though, to be fair.
And the thing is, even to this day, they are sticking to that story. They are not changing it whatsoever. Even when all the information there, people in their home villages saying, oh, yeah, we know they work for the security services. We know they've done this. We know they've done that. They are still sticking to the fact that they were sports supplements salesmen, popped over to London, thought they'd go a bit of cultural sightseeing.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's not particularly uncommon for hostile foreign powers to stick to slightly made up, questionable stories. I mean, you had with the journalist Khashoggi that a punch up, just a casual bar brawl, just happened to result in somebody being cut up into little pieces.
The big difference with Khashoggi was that Saudi Arabia changed their story virtually daily. Every time something new came out, they said, well, yeah, okay, but so that difference between the true pros from Moscow and the Saudi regime, the Saudi government.
But doesn't that just mean that Saudi Arabia is just a more interesting set of liars?
Yes, I mean, the attitude is, yes, we've got all the money, so what are you going to do about it? And I think so. Private Eye said we'll angrily sign some more arms deals with them.
It's going to be a reluctant signature.
And Zach, what would you say your favourite moment from the year was?
So I've got two. One is personal and petty, and one is pretty serious.
Okay.
Personal and petty one, the day Donald Trump arrived, me and a group of friends, mainly from the Green Party, borrowed a Dalek, got inside it. Yeah. I escorted it like a secret agent. Yes. The Dalek went round screaming, deport, deport, grab my pussy.
Genius.
And satiring various racist, misogynistic, homophobic things that Trump's come out with. And we made CNN, which was pretty cool. So nice. I actually think we were better than the blimp, but unfortunately the blimp got more attention. But
yeah, and so many more people learned about Daleks and Doctor Who in my country because of that.
Right.
So thanks.
And we've got a female Doctor Who now, too. Uh-huh. So, you know, nice. It's all anti-Trump. It's all happening. Secondly, a little bit more serious, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, said we basically have 12 years to save the planet, you know, if I'm paraphrasing. It was really nice to see, though, that finally the kind of social justice movement and the environmentalist movement are finally getting together and saying, actually, this disproportionately affects people of colour, it affects people who are poor in socioeconomic backgrounds, and actually air pollution, climate change, all of these issues that for years were just kind of lefty, radical kind of... people would dismiss them as the talk of crazy people and hippies. Well, I might still be a hippie, but finally, you know, things are becoming mainstream, people are talking about them, and actually change is starting to happen.
That should have actually been the biggest story of the year, but it's been swamped by everything else.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been a complaint that I've heard. I mean, one of the members of OFOC, Kathleen Clark, she said that because of what's happened in the past few years, every news cycle has been Trump, Brexit, third story of the day. There was simply no room for anything. And even with issues regarding climate change, you've got it being utterly swept away by, I mean, Donald Trump. Donald Trump has defunded the he stopped the environmental agency from basically using the term.
And the climate agreement, just pulling out.
Entirely. Yeah, I mean, it's so appalling because it is the first story on the docket every single day of the year is how can we live on this earth longer than 12 more years?
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it was like all the time, it's always story three when it should be, you know, sub point A.
Yeah.
And Femi, can I gently challenge you on your own show, which is like career suicide when you're as popular as you are. I think Brexit is such a massive issue and I love the work that you're doing on it. also, massive kudos for what you did with Anna Subaru the other day. I think in Yiddish we call it a mensch, someone of noble integrity, mm-hmm. that went and walked alongside a woman who was being threatened, and you didn't kind of threaten back, but you were just kind of with her in solidarity, and it was just beautiful. So thank you for that.
Or as Danny Dye would say, geezer.
Geezer. Yeah. Geezer. I can't quite pull that up.
So geezer's a good thing.
Ben is waiting for the challenge, though. we have an unfair voting system in this country, yep. and your conversation before was fascinating, and I agree with pretty much everything that was said.
But
Hillary Clinton, for instance, in the States, won by 3 million more votes. And yep. just no one seems to talk about that, about the electoral yep. college system. Mm. It's going on in this country, too. So people are marginalised and they're pushed off, and there's loads of reasons why they voted for Brexit. Yep. But for me, it's clear that the single biggest reason is that people do not have any agency in this country whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We don't have a fair voting system. They feel like their vote doesn't matter. So I think Russell Brand put it. He said, people saw a big fuck-off establishment red button and pressed it as yep. hard as they can.
Yep.
I would love to see you doing even more to support proportional representation. Oh, so being out there and kind of championing that as a cause of Brexit, though, because I feel like often Brexit and proportional representation aren't linked into the same conversation, and for me they're inextricably linked.
For me, the two causes of Brexit are regional inequality and a voting system that silences many voters.
Right.
Because, I mean, I'm from Bromsgrove, which is a constituency of Sajid Javid,
sure.
which means that my vote has never mattered, even a little bit. And so if you've got so many people around the country who know that no matter which way they vote, nothing will ever change. They will never be able to affect change in their area to make the lives of the people around them better. Of course, when they finally see the chance to have their vote counted in proportional representation, which is what happened in the EU referendum, exactly. they're going to vote for something that will make the biggest change possible, which at that time would be Brexit. And the irony of the whole thing in terms of proportional representation is that right now in the UK, because of the first-past-the-post system, whereby your votes only matter if you actually win in your constituency, you have more of a... Your opinions are more likely to be heard in the European Parliament than in the UK Parliament. Right. Because the European Parliament has proportional representation, and they have several parties where no party has a controlling majority ever in the European Parliament. So which means that every party has an actual say in how things run. Whereas in the UK, we have a minority government which somehow managed to buy off the DUP so she can control the entire Parliament, and yet that somehow represented a democracy, even though most people voted against her.
Right. And proportional representation results in more MPs of colour, more female yep. MPs, and actually it lessens your chance of going to war.
Yep.
So if anything in 2019, I hope we'll obviously continue talking about Brexit, as we should talk about people's vote, but I really hope that actually the national story, and I might be dreaming, will actually become about a fair voting system and how do we completely rip up democracy in this country and rebuild it with something that is actually democratic.
Well, that's kind of my point, because I want Brexit to stop. I want Brexit to stop as soon as possible.
Really? I didn't know that.
Are you sure you're being bothered? Enough about that, Danny, because there might be some confusion.
However, if a bunch of cocky Remainers go on TV the moment Brexit is stopped and say, talk about how, yeah, that's it, we're done, status quo, we won, you were wrong, blah, 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 we're fucked. Right. The country is fucked.
We need a consensus.
Yeah, what we need to have is people going on TV the moment that happens, saying, "All right, we're gonna use the same energy that we put into stopping Brexit to hold the feet of politicians to the fire to make sure they fix regional inequality, fix the voting system so that people's votes actually matter, and we can actually move forward." Because if we do not address the reasons why people vote for Brexit in the first place, the country is fucked.
Yeah.
And so that's what we want to do. I want to take a caller. We'll take a caller in a second. But I've just got. I'd like to ask Alistair Coleman. What is the plan for the rest of February and January now that the bins are back on track and it's not quite cold enough for the for proper potholes?
Yeah. Okay. The real reason I'm here. It is a blatant plug for my new book, which came out in November. It's called Angry People in Local Newspapers, and it's been published by Penguin, and it's a very reasonable £5 if you buy it on Amazon now, or the Wordery, which is better because they're my preferred book-selling website. It is a comedy book about, you know, how when something goes wrong in your life, like they don't empty the bins, or there's dog poo in your street, or that sort of thing. Instead of going to the council, the one place you do have to go to is your local newspaper. They'll send a man round or a woman round with a camera, and they will take a picture of the thing that's made you angry. For example, pointing at bins, pointing at dog poo, pointing at the thing you found in your burger. My favorite, the one that actually started me off was a woman pointing at a raw sausage held up on a fork because her naked neighbour made her angry, and that, yeah. headlined Naked Gardener.
I don't know where it was going.
Naked Gardener puts neighbour off sausages. That was my favourite. That is the thing that started me off. So, yeah, they're asking, what are we going to do in February once all the councils are caught up with emptying the bins? The councils never, ever catch up with emptying the bins. That's the one thing that keeps selling local newspapers, is people complaining about the bins not being emptied. Then it's dog poo, then it's parking, then it's buses. And just get out there, buy a local newspaper. It's local democracy in action. It's keeping people in jobs. I love local newspapers. I love the photographs. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. I've got such a passion for it now. I didn't when I started it. I was just taking the piss out of people, pointing at things. Like I mean, there's the best one from last year was the man who was charged 8p for brown sauce on his pie in Wigan. You don't do that in Wigan. That is Pie Central, that town. Yeah. But there he was holding a bottle of HP sauce, furious on the front page. Beautiful.
Well, we've got Amir on line one. Let's have a listen to Amir.
Hello.
Hi, Amir.
Hello.
What was your favourite moment from 2018?
That's actually quite a difficult question, because I've had to have a long think about the whole of 2018 and what part of it wasn't a massive train wreck. I think probably the People's March in October.
Yeah.
Because it was nice to see that at least a few people in the country that hadn't totally gone mad and kind of, I don't know, regardless of where you voted in the referendum, I think having another vote on it now that we've got more information about it is just a good idea, really.
Well, I mean, we signed a blank check in 2016. We said let's reject our current relationship with the rest of the EU, but we didn't know what relationship we were going to get. We now know what it is. It only makes sense if we get a chance to have a say on which one we prefer. I'm told that you're a student. What do you study?
Medicine. I'm quite invested in the whole NHS.
I mean, people were told that voting for Brexit would help the NHS. How do you feel Brexit would affect the NHS?
Well, I mean, I was never really sold on the whole idea that leaving the EU would be anything but totally disastrous for the NHS. But I can see how some people could have been persuaded.
But why would Brexit hurt the NHS?
Well, we get a lot of money from the EU, and also quite a substantial number of the people who work for the NHS are actually people who are EU citizens that kind of come over and work for us. So if they're kind of, I mean, we've been told that they'll still be kind of allowed to work, but I think I know personally a lot of people who've just taken it as a bit of a slap in the face and have just gone, do you know what, I'm just going to go back to Europe.
What? So you're saying that if we voted to leave off the back of a campaign that basically said that people from other countries were an absolute problem and a burden upon society, that wasn't a massive welcome mat to doctors from other EU countries?
Yeah, who've been giving so much time and energy and all of their life study to helping British people,
and
only to be rejected by
them. Literally keeping
them
alive.
that would upset me as well.
And how do you think this affects your future?
Well, I mean, quite negatively, because obviously, as the number of doctors decreases, I mean, the amount of people getting sick is not going to decrease with that.
Yeah.
So it just means more workload for me, more stress on other junior doctors, more mistakes get made due to tiredness and just overwork.
So Brexit is literally bad for the health of our nation?
Yeah, basically, in a nutshell, yeah.
Well, that is depressing, but I want to tell you right now that because Brexit was one of the reasons why people voted for, because the NHS was one of the reasons why people wanted Brexit, I'm hoping that given a choice, when they realise that Brexit is bad for the NHS, people will vote to stay when we get that people's vote on the deal. Thank you very much, Amir. We're going to work to make your life a little bit easier and make sure you can be a doctor afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Guys, I just wanted to ask, quick final thoughts from you guys. What do you want to see in 2019?
That was pretty grim, wasn't it? We're like, okay, let's give that to a company.
Other than the crumbling of the National Health Service.
Right, exactly. I think there's a real opportunity here. Everything is grim and it's all falling apart. Mm. But I think out of that, you guys were talking about before with the blue wave. Mm. I don't want a blue wave in the UK. Let's be very careful about that.
Yeah.
But I think people are fine. I think we can say thank you to those people who said no to the establishment, who said no to the status quo. We can say thank you and now let's work for you. So I hope we see that in 2019.
Excellent. Yeah. Asser?
I want to see an end to fake news in the media, how foreign powers meddling with our politics through that. And then that will give people more of a chance to settle down, be calm, point at their bins when they don't get empty.
Absolutely. Desiree?
I'd have to agree with what is said before, and that I do want to see more repudiation of the status quo and more activism, more people coming out into the streets and coming out together. And also, I don't know if you guys have been watching Bumping Mics on Netflix, but Jeff Ross did this great thing about when he was talking about, like, oh yeah, 2018 has been this way for women. And he's like, I'm for it. I want to see what you bitches do for a change. And I'm like, that's exactly what we want too. Give us a chance to fix things and fuck them up because it's our turn. You guys have had centuries. Let us take the reins for a while and, you know, show you what we got.
Let the grown-ups have a go for it.
Exactly. That's what I want.
The patriarchies work so well. I mean, we've got Donald Trump, Putin, and Kim Jong-un in charge of the world. I mean,
I want to see uncontrolled, unbridled matriarchy. I want all of us to saw off our left tit and just start, you know, shooting arrows into things, flaming arrows, just Katniss Everdeen, this whole shit. That's what I want to see. I mean, it's time. Yeah. It's time.
And Game of Thrones finishes this year, so you probably get it.
Joan of Arc for the win. Guys, this has been The Floor Is Yours. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.